Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror. Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, what's going on this Saturday morning?
Oh, man, I'm doing fantastic. Up bright and early, getting the day going.
Joining us, of course, sometimes, because he's a slacker, our our play-by-play man for New Ohio Wrestling, Mr. John Orlando. John, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Jim, although I don't appreciate those slacker comments.
But on this episode of Wrestle Horror, I was excited about this when Donnie reached out. It's old. If you're old school like we are, you'll know this name. Dr. Tom Pritchard, how are you today?
I'm doing great today. It's a beautiful day here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Thunder, lightning, rain, perfect for a horror podcast.
There you go.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
So we got the horror element in there.
Yes, we do, man. It's storming bad here, but it's good.
So, Donnie, I'll let you start off.
Yeah, we wanted to get into your background. Like I said, anybody that's a fan of wrestling knows a lot about your background. And, like I said, I'm sure John and Jim have a lot of questions about your history of becoming a wrestler. But I'm more interested in this training and the school and your training with WWE and being their head trainer. And so I'd like to tap into that kind of stuff if I could.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing about wrestling because there's not just one way to do it. And wrestling has always just been an opinion. My way, your way, the right way does not exist. So it's that's why everybody has such a distinct style. You know, we all have to figure out who to pat on the back and who to kick in the ass. And you don't always know who to do that to or the right thing to do. And there's just that much distance between, you know, good job and hey, get moving. And so we're all looking for results. We're all looking for the right thing to do. And I think as coaches or trainers, mentors, it's one of those ongoing processes. As you mature in training, you figure things out, and or at least the smart ones do, and the ones who are successful figure it out, that you never stop learning, you never stop moving. The time you decide that you know it all, decide that I've done enough, is when you need to stop. And I loved wrestling my whole life, ever since I can remember, and grew up in West Texas, was born in El Paso. Then we moved to Houston when I was 10 and got a whole different outlook on professional wrestling. But the thing is, it's always been sports entertainment. It was just approached differently when I was growing up, as the guys that I saw would come out and treat it like it was real, like it was a legitimate contest. And looking back now, through my eyes, I could see how hokey a lot of it could look. But at the same time, while we had the hokiness, and in El Paso we had a guy named the Mummy, and you know, you had masked wrestlers like the Infernos, the Interns, the Medics, and names like that that kind of brought this mystery out. You know, some of the things they did, you'd have to ask yourself, how could you really do that in a legitimate contest? But you had guys like Terry Funk, Johnny Valentine, Wahoo McDaniel, who would actually, once they hit the guy, hit their opponent, you would see the welts come up on their body, and you would believe it. So, you know, there was a lot of back and forth when I was growing up in wrestling about, you know, you had your believers, you had your non-believers, and the old saying was, for those who believe, no explanation is needed, and for those who don't, no explanation will do. So that was a safe way to get out of the argument. But then when I went to Memphis, and keeping on the horror theme here, they would bring out Freddy Krueger and Frankenstein. And even in Los Angeles in the late 70s, early 80s, they had the Monster and you know, just some crazy, crazy stuff. But wrestling and superheroes and things like that always went hand in hand. And I enjoyed the aspect of it. I enjoyed every element there was, from living on the road to playing one night stands every night and going to a new city or a new country. That's the coolest thing in the world to me, just to be able to experience everything there is out in the world. And, you know, I like to believe in magic. You know, we all know Copperfield didn't make the Statue of Liberty disappear, but the point is, he was brazen enough to say he did, prove he did. And same thing with wrestling. We were brazen enough to say, hey, you get in the ring with us and we'll show you it's real, by God, knowing full well, we're just hoping you don't. Or at least right. I was. Yeah.
Piggybacking off of what Donnie just asked about the your aspect and your background and training, and you said that, you know, there's not just one right way, but is there some key attributes that a good trainer has to have?
Yeah, I think you have to be enthusiastic as a trainer. You have to be inspiring as a trainer and a coach, because that's really all our job is to get the best out of whoever comes to train with us. And how do you do that? What method do you use to get the best out of people? Again, some are we're all motivated differently. Some people are motivated by the pat on the back, being encouraging. Other people need to be woke up. Other people need to have a kick in the ass to wake them up and get down the path they need to get down. I think you need to have patience, and you need to have understanding and empathy as well, to realize I love this business my whole life. And man, I worked in the wrestling office in the summers during high school. But when I had my first match, I was flabbergasted at how much I really didn't know. And the only way you learn this, the only way you do it, is by experience and getting in the ring. And the problem these days, there's no one to teach you once you get in the ring. And we used to, when I broke in, we had veterans who'd been around maybe 15, 20 years sometimes. At the end of their career, their life, their job was to help the younger generation coming up. And you'd be married to a guy who'd been in the business for a while, and he would tell you, talk to you in the ring, slow down, just take your time, fire up, come on back. And now there's nobody to do that, because it's the blind leading the blind. So as a coach, you have to find a way to connect and explain what you're saying. You know, the bump, I can't bump like I used to. I can't move like I used to. So I can get in the ring and show you some, but I've done that before too. And I don't want anybody to touch me. I've got a really bad neck, and I've paid the price for it. So I think being empathetic, understanding, having patience, and I lose all three of those in the turn. Sometimes I just get frustrated and yell and scream, and then I have to sit back and explain to these guys, my yelling and screaming is part of my coaching and teaching. It is a mechanism I use to get your attention. And some get it and some don't. We're living in strange times, man. This, who knows what's going to happen on the back end of this whole thing. But we still have people training with us, and people still have that love and passion for wrestling. And that's good to see too. And I think as a coach, you have to have that love and passion for it too. Otherwise it just goes away.
Okay. So COVID hasn't impacted the Jacobs Pritchard Wrestling Academy too severely, has it?
Yeah, it did when it first started, because we were on the last week of our first class in January, and then we were supposed to start in March, and we got shut down for 2 months. And that was interesting, but we went ahead and had this next class. We started with 14 people, so, and then our class after this, beginning in August 31st, so far we have 12 people signed up. So, yeah, it's been kind of like the Twilight Zone for everybody. But we're still continuing on, and thank God people still want to come and learn. And be a part of this crazy business in one form or another. So while it's not affecting us too bad now, we're still taking precautions. We're doing the temperature readings and we're wearing masks when we need to wear masks. And we're marching forward.
Now, in your training down there in Tennessee, is it contact training still, or are you guys doing like no contact cardio, that kind of thing?
No, we got approved a while back for contact training. And so we've had the guys working out and training and wrestling and taking bumps. We'd sterilize the ring before and after. So we've been taking all the precautions.
Are they back to running events and stuff, live events?
Well, we don't run live events, but some of the guys up here do. Yeah, they're okay. Around Sevierville and around Knoxville. There have been a couple of promoters who have, and some in West Tennessee too.
Okay, yeah, because I know Ohio here for us, we're still shut down completely.
But do you guys have a commission?
Yeah, we have an athletic commission. Yep.
And that could be a big part of it. But again, I think it's all a matter of doing what you need to do from sterilizing the ring, the ropes, the corners and things like that. So, and we're doing all that.
Cool. Well, if I can ask a little bit about your background and your history, and I think you kind of mentioned it a little bit that at the age of 10 years old, you were kind of hanging around the Houston wrestling office. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but it wasn't until I was actually 12, you know, that I got to start taking pictures at ringside and for magazines and things like that, Gong Magazine in Japan, Wrestling News Magazine in Minneapolis. And my brother Ken took me down to meet Paul Bosch, the promoter, for the first time. And it was nerve-wracking, but I wanted to wrestle, and I told Paul this, and Paul was this huge 6'5" man. He was larger than life with these two big cauliflower ears. And, he let me take pictures. And then I was hanging around. We were going every Friday night, and then, Gino Hernandez, a young guy, was hanging around there, same time. He was about 3-4 years older than me, but it was that rivalry type thing. Gino was bigger, taller, and he started first. He broke in the wrestling business first, but I was still there. Bruce was still there, and we did the next natural steps. You know, hey, if you ever need anybody to help you on a Friday night, we're here. And then Paul moved from his office downtown, and we helped with the move. And during the summertime, it just fell into, Would you like to work here for the summertime? And I did. From the time I was 15, I had my learner's permit, could drive, until I had my first match at 20. I worked the summers in the office, and when I graduated high school, I worked full time there. And that was the greatest dream job you could have, especially as a kid. You know, I'm looking around this museum in Houston with all these pictures, and you have the guys, you know, every Friday morning, Gary Hart would come in and go over the show with Paul. He was a booker from Dallas, but it was the greatest for me. It was the greatest job, the greatest thing I could ever do. You know, it groomed me for this, and I'm glad it did.
When you turned pro, though, you ended up in California, correct?
Yes.
You were not in the Houston area. You went to California. What was the territory in Los Angeles and California like?
Right. Well, I mean, I had my first match in October of 79, and I worked around some places in Texas and Louisiana, but not in Houston. No. I actually worked around Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, and some of those towns for Watts when I first started. And I was supposed to go to Portland, Oregon in January. But Gary Hart booked me in California for some reason because they needed talent and business was down. But yeah, I went to California in 1980. And that was, you know, in the 70s, the only way you really knew about the other territories was through the wrestling magazines. We didn't have the internet, mm-hmm. didn't have all this stuff. So in the wrestling magazines, they would call Los Angeles in the Olympic Auditorium, the Madison Square Garden of the West Coast. So now I'm traveling from Houston to LA to go wrestle in the Madison Square Garden of the West Coast. And it's like a lot of places you get to, you know, you have high expectations and you're building up in your mind. And I did. I've seen the pictures, you know, the mythology was there. And when I walked in, it was like, wow, this is cool, but it's not what I expected. And it's the same thing when you walk into Madison Square Garden for the first time. You go, wow, this is cool, but it's not what I expected. And it was a pleasant surprise because growing up, some of these old buildings had this feel to it, this aura, this mystique, this vibe that you got when you saw it for the first time. And that's what I experienced in L.A. I was supposed to be there 2 weeks at the most and then go to Oregon. And the booker at that time was Chavo Guerrero Sr. And he said, no, man, you're staying here. And I just thought they were going to take care of everything to let Don Owen know I wasn't coming to Oregon. But nobody ever did. And I eventually wound up in Oregon 4 years later. And Don told me, he says, nobody ever called me, told me you weren't coming. And I thought, oh, okay. But Los Angeles was really a cool place. They have some cool buildings. It was, I was living in Van Nuys, California, 10 minutes from Hollywood, 15 minutes from the beach. You know, I had nothing to complain about at 20 years old. I was living life. I was a professional wrestler. I was on my own. I was on the road, man, living life. So yeah, it was great for me. I enjoyed LA for the year I was there.
Well, I have a question that, and this is just my own opinion, so you feel free to differ with me. I feel like the Pacific Northwest and Don Owen and Portland wrestling doesn't quite get as much credit as it should. And that's just my own personal opinion on that. Do you feel the same way, or do you think that, you know, it gets its proper due? Because I feel like a lot of wrestling fans don't really know a lot about Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I would have to agree. But the Northwest and Don Owen's territory especially was a place where young guys would go and get experience. They had a chance to work 6 and sometimes 7 nights a week. No less than 5 nights a week. And that was the way you really learn this business, is get in there, repetition, repetition, repetition. And they were so far up in the Northwest, and it was like that with every local TV show. Almost every industry up there is one of those places to kind of make your mistakes, try it on this coast, try it way up here where you're being hidden and nobody's really paying attention to you, and then go back into the mainstream and kind of take what you've learned and progress from there. But yeah, Don Owen was one of those guys, fairer than most, I would say. Certainly was opinionated at times, but really wanted to give guys an opportunity. That was, he recognized that the lifeblood of professional wrestling was the talent, and if you don't have talent, you're not going to have a business. And Don took the time to have veterans up there like Rip Oliver and he had Dutch Savage up there for a few times, Stan Stasiak, just guys who had been around, guys that could impart wisdom just by talking to you, having a casual conversation. That's a lot of learning that goes on too, just through the locker room conversations, talking about life, talking about who you knew before you got there, and philosophies and trying a bunch of stuff and keeping what works. So I think Portland doesn't get enough publicity or mention because nobody really understood what their goal was and what their objective was to get young guys in there, give them experience, and then send them out to the other territories, because everybody was working with everybody back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to say that this is probably my favorite Dr. Tom Pritchard moment, if you will, because as a young junior high student, I saw a clip of this and I was like, oh my God, this was so crazy. If you don't mind, could you tell me who came up with the idea from Continental where Lady Mystic, Tony White, Tony Anthony, the Dirty White Boy, and you had that whole altercation that kind of was pushing the envelope on the spousal abuse storyline. Who came up with that idea, if I may ask?
Well, again, I grew up in El Paso, and as a kid, we watched a black and white TV from El Paso Championship Wrestling in the afternoon. And Dory Funk Sr. and Jr. Terry Funk were the main stars in West Texas. A young Nick Bockwinkel came through, and there was a guy having a match in the ring, and he was called the Hangman. And he had a noose, and he would bring the noose to the ring and put it over the turnbuckle and over the ring post. And one particular match, I remember the Hangman beating a job guy and then going for his noose. He's going to put the noose around this kid's neck. Nick Bockman comes in a suit and tie, not a suit, but a shirt and tie. You know, they look very, very professional back then. You know, this was a totally different culture. And Bockwinkel attacks Hangman and takes the noose off the guy's neck. And as he's checking on this guy, of course, the Hangman takes the noose, puts it around Bockwinkel's neck, backs him up to the corner, takes Bockwinkel and bills him from corner to corner like three or four times. And Nick is selling the effects of being – whipped all over the ring. Okay, so that always stuck with me for some reason. And Eddie Gilbert had just come into Alabama taking the book. And Tony and I, the white boy and I, had been doing this angle leading up to what we did with the news. And I Eddie wanted an angle, and I said, well, what if he hung me in the ring? And he says, okay, I need more than that. And we sat and thought about it. So, okay, here's what we're going to do. We had a match where it's a street fight for the Alabama championship. I'm the champion. A white girl comes in, puts ether on my face, beats me with for the Alabama title. The next week, I come in out of the audience with my hair up under my hat, sunglasses, and wearing a jacket. And during the white boys match, I get in the ring, hit him with a board, knock him out, and I cut his hair. So after that, I said, the next week we can have Kim come up, have little shades on, but underneath you can see she's kind of bruised up. And then, again, this is 1980, whatever. And spousal abuse has always been taboo. I know that. It's mm-hmm. So we had to walk that line. Nobody wants to – nobody wants to watch somebody beat up a woman. It's Alabama. That's terrible too. But anyway. So we did the deal, and Kim comes up and she's almost crying, and Gordon's going to console her. So we came up with this whole deal, man. And that was the hanging was my idea, but here's what we didn't think about. Back then we didn't go out and rehearse it. We talked about it. We might have, you know, walk through it in the back. We didn't go to the ring. We didn't see how far the interview stand was from the ring. And I didn't take into consideration when I said, and you could handcuff my hand behind my back so they can't see that I'm going to be pulling it. Well, the idea was this. Tony comes out and attacks me. I had my glasses on, take my glasses off the referee. Tony shoots me into the interview stand. We collapse that. It's down. And the referee comes out to check on me. Earlier in the night, we had taken a syringe and took blood from my arm. The late great Randy Colley took blood from my arm and put it into a condom. And we put it in warm water in the dressing room. But we didn't tie the condom tight enough. And you know, condoms pretty strong. They have to be, right? Mm-hmm. And what in the hell are you going to do with the condom in your mouth? Anyway, the referee had the condom, comes out and puts it in my mouth as I'm laying down. And I can already tell it's kind of squishy in there because I'm trying to bite it. The idea was Tony puts a noose around me, handcuffs my hands, puts a noose around me, and is going to drag me from the interview platform to the ring. We didn't even think about how far it was. We didn't think about the noose. It actually cinches up on you, even if you're not pulling, but you're pulling the rope, and he's trying not to, but it's tight, and he's really choking me for this instance. And I have this condom now in my mouth, the referee put in my mouth as he came out to check on me. And we're going down to the ring, and I'm trying to bite it, and I see, oh, man, this isn't going to happen. So we get to the ring, and as he's hanging me, I'm still trying to bite this condom. And Steve Armstrong had a little bit of a blade. He was supposed to come out and pop it if it didn't pop. And at the end of the shot, they show a wide shot, and Steve pokes it. But they see no blood. The fans, I think some of the fans at the fairgrounds that night saw it, but there was no blood. So we had this elaborate scheme planned out, but the best laid plans don't always work. Again, he was choking the living hell out of me, and we got the point across, and just I don't think there were that many people interested in coming to watch us. Work our magic, so to speak. But yeah, that was my idea. Tony, I'd seen it before. Tony said, sure, I'd love to kill you. Why not?
Well, let me just tell you, it stuck with me. I wrote down it was in 1988, so I would have been in seventh grade. And I remember seeing that clip and going, that's not supposed to be happening. Like, cause you know, totally believed it. Like, you know, you don't hit a woman and that. And I was like, oh my gosh, it was cutting edge for me.
That really wasn't supposed to be happening because he was choking the hell out of me, man. But you know, that was part of the thing. That was so cool because we could do stuff like that. And I remember seeing things like that as a kid, saying the same thing, like, oh my God, what was this? And you know, they would use a loaded boot on Terry Funk, or the Von Brauners with Saul Weingroff would beat up Terry Funk, cut his hair. And how could that happen? You know, Grizzly Smith, Harley Race came off Grizzly off the top of a ladder on Grizzly Smith's neck and broke his neck. He'll never be able to wrestle again, except he went to Japan for 6 weeks, and then he came back and got revenge, you know? So, I mean, all those things that I saw, too, I kind of went, man, you guys had me right there. And I've told a lot of guys that. I said, dude, I watched you guys wrestle. This is why I want to get into it, because you had me, and I want to know how you did it. And, so, yeah, that was cool. A lot of people said that, and I think that's very, very cool, man.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that even though it's taboo and it, you know, it would probably draw tremendous outrage nowadays in our times, that stuff like that, you know, it is impactful and it does work to where it sticks with people and people remember that. And so, you know, to me, that doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing. I think it's a great thing, because the basis of wrestling is to tell a story that people get invested in. And obviously from what John's saying, he was invested in that story and it still is, you know?
Yeah. And that's the other thing I think is back then it was all we did. And all we had time to think about was that. And, it was a lot of fun, and it was a lot of, fun and good times, I guess the same thing, but there were a lot of good times, and, that authenticity and a lot of that is missing today, because nobody really knows how to have, fun. You want to worry about the spots and everything you want to do in the ring, which is business, yes, but at the same time, if it's not real and if it's not authentic, and what I mean by real is making people believe it, or you believing it, and everybody's smart these days, so they say. But Johnny Valentine used to say, I might not get them to believe in wrestling, but I can damn sure make them believe in me. And so some of those guys, like Brock Lesnar, who is authentic, when he goes to the ring, people aren't so sure if he's going to snap or not. And that's that element of doubt that a lot of guys don't understand today. And that was pretty prevalent when I was watching wrestling and when I was coming up in it. And it changed, as all things do. Everything changes. But the basics and fundamentals, I will say this, never go out of style. And the basics and fundamentals include and are mostly needed is storytelling, and to get people invested, no matter what it is, no matter what show, no matter what commercial, no matter what you're selling, you got to tell a good story. It's got to be compelling. It's got to be interesting, and it's got to draw you in. And I think too many times. Now, again, with the culture we find ourselves in, it's instant gratification, lack of attention span. We can have all the excuses in the world. People eat sausage on a daily basis. I mean, I don't know. Orange juice is bad for whatever we want to say. There's 7-Eleven is open till noon. All the excuses in the world don't mean anything. It's just if you see something and you get into it, that's the idea. So if it looks good, you'll see it. If it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it's marketed right, you buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it, and so will everybody else.
You know, Tom, I got to say, I started watching wrestling at about the age of 12 with my cousins. And I got really invested in it. I grew up in Florida, so I watched a lot of Florida Championship Wrestling. Really invested in it. You know, you couldn't convince me for the world that it was scripted. I believed everything I saw until I went to a house show in Melbourne, Florida, which pitted Barry Windham against Les Thornton. And Barry was the face, Les was the heel, and it was a great match that Barry won. So me and my best friend are out there, 16 years old, trying to get autographs at the back of the auditorium. And here comes Barry with Les. Barry puts his arm around Les and said, "Let's go get a beer." It just, right. Boom.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
Right. Well, but you know, and here's the thing. I remember, real quick, I'll tell you, here's my story on that. Because back in the day, and we're talking 1969, 1970, Grizzly Smith, who was Jake Roberts' dad, he came to El Paso. He came to West Texas, and his gimmick was he had a cast iron stomach. You couldn't hurt him. And he got on the promo and said, "I don't even care if you want to get on your ladder, your 15 foot, 18 foot, 20 foot. I don't care how far you want to come. You can't hurt me." So they had done this week after week with guys coming out and jumping on his stomach and proving it. And finally, Harley Race came out and says, "Hey, I got my ladder here today. Where are you, you coward?" And the next, you don't call anybody a coward in wrestling, get away with it, by God. So the next segment, Grizz came out and he says, "All right, now we're going to set this up." Now, Nick Roberts is the announcer. Nick Roberts is Baby Doll's dad. So it's all connected, man. They set up the ladder, and again, it's in a studio, and you can see Harley way up in the lights. And Nick Roberts tells the audience, "Ladies and gentlemen, we need complete silence, concentration. Please don't make a sound. Let, you know, Harley get his footing." Well, Harley gets up there, make a big production about it, and it's all in the production. It's all in the setup. And Harley gets there, and he's in the lights, and he's adjusting the lights. And then all of a sudden, he drops down with a knee right across Grizzly Smith's neck. Wouldn't you know it, that no good, rotten son of a – and by God, the studio erupts. Nick Roberts goes, "Oh, my God, ladies and gentlemen, oh, my God." And then Harley comes over and says, "What did you do?" He says, "Those goofs didn't hold the ladder right. The light was in my eyes. I couldn't," whatever. So Nick Roberts says, and again, this is West Texas, but Nick Roberts says, "We need an ambulance, not an ambulance, an ambulance." I'll never forget that. "We need an ambulance." So they got an ambulance and they rolled up the door to the back of the studio. The ambulance pulled in, put Grizz in there. They took him away, and Nick Roberts is doesn't know what's going to happen. Grizz has his tongue hanging out, and oh my God, we don't know what's going to happen. Stay tuned. We'll keep you updated. Well, at this time, we were moving to Houston, Texas, and I have a lady who's going to send me the newspaper clippings from El Paso, keep me up to date with what's going on there, friend of my mom's, and so she sends me all this stuff. Grizzly Smith is touch and go. We don't know what's going to happen. I get to Houston, Texas. There's a new crew of wrestlers there. There is Johnny Valentine, Wahoo McDaniel, Jose Lothario, the Great Malenko, the Spoiler, Gary Hart. There was a great list of guys who, you know, great wrestlers, great, great workers. And we're watching Houston wrestling weekly and listening to Paul Bosch talk about the upcoming events and things like this. And And 1 week, Paul gets on and says, next Friday night, ladies and gentlemen, returning to action from a career-threatening injury. Grizzly Smith is coming back to get revenge on Johnny Valentine for coming off the second rope with his brain buster, his elbow, on a Grizz's neck. And he had put Grizz out at the same time Harley had put Grizz out in Houston or in El Paso. And during that time, you know, Grizz was working in El Paso and Houston, and he was working with the race in El Paso and John in Houston. But he had a six-week tour of Japan coming up, so they did the injury angle. Grizz is out for 6 weeks, and he comes back. And I told both Grizz and Harley that when I got in the business. I said, you guys are responsible for smartening me up, because I saw what happened in West Texas, and I can move to East Texas. You guys do the same angle. And Grizz says, yeah, I had a six-week tour of Japan. And I thought, well, that was intriguing. And it just always – that always got me. Once I found that out, that it intrigued me even more how these guys can perpetuate this con or this whatever you wanted to call it. It wasn't an act, because these guys were kind of walking that line. You just had to know how to turn your personality up to 10 when you went out in the ring. But I thought that was an insanely cool way to make a living and go out there and have a blast. Like I said, going from town to town and realizing that you can make people scream, cheer, yell, boo, cry, laugh, whatever you want to do. That was a great thing about wrestling, and it still is in some places. They still get that vibe and that idea that it is supposed to be fun, it is supposed to be entertaining, and it is supposed to suspend disbelief. So you don't just go out there and half-ass it. You have to go out there. You have to have a love for it. If you don't have a love for this, it's going to be mighty hard to make other people love what you're doing too.
Yeah, good advice.
Sure, for sure.
If we can move on to a little later on down the road where you teamed up with Stan Lane and the Heavenly Bodies, and you went to Smoky Mountain, that's where that team was formed, correct?
That is correct. I was working in Memphis, and Cornette had had enough of WCW. The idea originally was to bring the Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling. But Bobby Eaton had just signed a contract. He had family, but Stan and Jimmy had had enough. And Jim had already had his sights on doing something in Knoxville. So when he called me, I'd already been in Memphis about a year, a little over maybe. Then it was time to make a move. So that was a good break for me as well, because working with I had known Jim for maybe 15 years at that point, and always got along with him, and he had considered me before, but things just didn't fall that way. So now I was getting the chance, and that was a pretty good break.
Yeah, and that's what opened the door for the WWE, and which became a storied career for you in and out of the ring.
Yeah, more so out of the ring. I mean, more so, I think, just with the training aspect of it, because at that time when I got to WWE, I was already 33 years old. I had some injuries, it wasn't as young as I wanted to be, wasn't as young as I could have been. But we made it there. It was just the fact that it wasn't the storied, fabled career that some have. But it was a lot of fun, man. It really was.
Yeah, I saw on a YouTube video a while back, somebody had asked you about the Body Donis, because you switched to the Body Donis. Yep. And it said that you ended up hating your name Zip, but you loved your tag team partner.
Well, I love Chris. It was horrible. I mean, dude, me and a bleached blonde crew cut? No. I've always worn long hair. The Body Donna gimmick was terrible for a lot of reasons. And, you know, Chris was a great guy. He loved the business. He would do anything. That's what he lived for. But Tammy was always Tammy, and Tammy said that you have to, you must have confidence, you must have an ego to succeed in anything you do. And Tammy didn't lack any of that. She believed in herself, which is good. It's a good thing. But I couldn't take it. I don't want to be around it. It was 24/7 with her. She never, that switch was never off. And so that was what made it so not very nice for me. You know, it's just the personalities I was around at that time.
Yeah, clash personalities, that happens. Within your tag team career, what would you say would be your favorite match that's most memorable for you?
You know, I really don't know if there's a favorite match, but any match with the Rock and Roll Express was always fun. God, we worked with the Steiners at SummerSlam. That was kind of cool. That was really our it was our first pay-per-view experience with WWE. And but I don't know if that was necessarily had a favorite that stood out. But there were a lot that we had that were cool, easy, and fun. So
cool.
Yeah, I know. You say with all the wrestling and training and stuff that you've done, it's the who's who of wrestling on people that you've trained or has had a hand in helping. And just like Kurt Angle, Val Venus, The Rock, Shane McMahon, Natalya. I mean, the list goes on and on, Mark Henry, you know, on people that you've trained. And that's what I want to kind of get into more is to talk about your training school. I want to step back into that. And it's, you know, John said, it's the Jacobs Pritchard Wrestling Academy. And talk a little bit more about your school and what you guys plan. Do you guys run live events for your students, or do you send them out and help them get work and how all that works?
When we first started JPWA, we had big hopes and dreams of running shows around here. We're gonna run outside of Knoxville. We're gonna make this work. And then we started doing the training. And our deal is this: we wanted to train at least 5 days a week. And originally, we were training Monday, Tuesday, off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then we'd come in Sunday for promos. And on those weekdays, we were going from 6 to 10. Now, if you work a job all day and then you have to come and go another 4 hours and you don't get off till 10 o'clock, those are long days. And I understand that, but the deal is, there's 24 hours in a day. I believe what's possible is done. I believe if you want to do something and it's worth it to you that much, you believe it, by all means, you can do whatever you put your mind to. I truly, truly believe that. But, you know, once I got into the training and I understood a little bit more about how my days were going to go and how much time it actually takes to go out and try and get these buildings and try and get sponsors and try and get people to come out. And when you're first starting, you really don't have any equity. You don't have anything equity and talent wise too. I mean, so we don't run live shows right now. We're only in our second year, and at the beginning of 2020, we were looking forward to it, and then all of a sudden this thing hit, and we went, oh, my goodness. So we're not running shows right now. I'm training. Glenn will stop by on occasion, and we have people who have been gracious enough to book our guys and help them get experience. But here's the thing. Once again, I have my way of coaching. You know, you have your way, I have my way, the right way, the only way does not exist. Wrestling is an opinion. Coaching is an opinion. Coaching is a style, and we all have our different ways of getting through. And I get frustrated when people come and profess this great love and this great dedication and passion for professional wrestling, and then you get in the ring and you figure out, wait a minute, I actually have to fall down on purpose? And – and then they find out, even though I'll show you and I'll tell you over and over, tuck your chin, slap the mat, tuck your chin, slap the mat, tuck your chin, slap the mat. Oh, you mean like this? No. And they hit their head or they hurt their back. Totally understandable, especially people who've never trained before or done anything like this before. But then I ask, you know, I want to play in the NBA, but I'm not tall enough and I don't play basketball. But man, it looks cool. I think I can go out there and shoot some hoops. But does that mean I belong in the NBA? No, not everybody that comes to train belongs in wrestling. And some people don't understand that because they see other places where you see guys who have never seen a gym, who go out there and play, and nobody tells them that doesn't work because there's the fan base for that. And there's a fan base, you know, I like this, you like that, you know, and I teach the basics and fundamentals, and there is some truth that hold true. We work the left side of the body. If you grab the right side, if you grab my right arm, or if you grab a headlock with the right side, that is a foreign concept to a pro. That's a foreign concept to anybody who's in the ring with you. So you need to know the basics and fundamentals. We work the left arm. We grab a headlock with the left arm. There's a reason for that. We go to the right when we go in the ring. We come up to the right side. There's a reason for this, and I explain it. After I explain it over and over and over, and you've been with me 10 weeks, and you still go to the right side, I have to assume a couple things. You either not listen to me, or you're a complete moron. And I don't know which is which, or it's both. I mean, we're all, as coaches, looking for results. I want everyone who comes through JPWA to succeed because that only helps us. We've had Emily Anzula sign with NXT. She was in the Rock's Titan Games, Titan Games. She's from Knoxville. She came back. She wanted to train with us. Now she's in Orlando, doing great. She came in on Shayna Baszler last Monday. She was a blonde girl at the end who tapped out. But she's there in NXT. She's an athlete. She gets it. She understands hard work. She understands going through the fire to get what you want. So coaching at JPWA, for me, again, I try to make it fun. I try to be say things that are obviously so ridiculous to show you how ridiculous it really is when I say it out loud. Because sometimes just showing the absurd, doing the absurd to demonstrate how absurd it really looks. Now you see me doing it and explain why. Here's my reasoning. That's my method of training, watching film, watching tapes, watching matches. A great match with Terry Funk versus Harley Race, which is one of my go-to matches from 1977, July 1st. 1977 from Houston, Texas. Harley Race is the world champion versus Terry Funk, the challenger. Harley had beat Terry earlier in the year in Toronto. Now he's getting his rematch in Houston. And they tell this 40-minute story, 2 out of 3 falls. And in that 40 minutes, not one time, do either Terry or Harley look at the audience for approval. But you hear the crowd. You watch the movement. They're into the match. They're telling a story. And I've showed this to all our classes so far. Had a couple kids come back and say, hey, I tried to watch that match last night. I just couldn't get into it. Okay, we're going to watch it today with the whole class. I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. I'm going to show you that there's no such thing as a rest hold. There's everything you do in the ring means something. Every small little movement means something. It's just the nuances. It's just the little things you do. We watched John Cena versus CM Punk from Chicago, Money in the Bank. You watch the emotion on the faces. You watch the movements. They let it breathe. They don't go bam, 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 bam. They don't just do spot after spot. And that's storytelling. Do we need flip, flop, and fly today? Of course. We need everything for everybody on the card. When there used to be a circus, they would have the lion tamers, the bears, the, you know, whatever acts they had. And that's what wrestling needs to do too, is have an act, have a match that people are going to get into. And that's why you have 5, maybe 6 matches. You don't have 15 or 20 because then you're there till 2 a.m. That's stupid. And I've seen that too. You know, guys go out and have 15 matches. No, you're overkill, man. And you're going to lose it. But you need stories to tell, and you need to have something for everybody. Real quick, Paul Bosch used to say, I like to go fishing, but I also like strawberries. But when I go fishing, I put worms on the hook because I'm trying to catch fish. So you give your fans what they want. What attracts your fans? If the fans want blood and guts, well, then you give them blood and guts. If your fans want super kicks, high flying, and crazy stuff, you give them super kicks, high flying, crazy stuff. But you'll know if they come out, that's – you feed them this. If they don't, you find out what they're hungry for and you feed them that. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. It's not what I like. It's what the company you're working for, their fans like. And a good company that knows will be in tune with this fan base and do the market research and ask their fans and engage with their fans and get to know their audience. I mean, so we used to do that in FCW when people would come to our shows in FCW. We'd have a questionnaire and ask the fans, how'd you hear about it? What do you watch FCW on? How'd you know? Posters, flyers, whatever it is. And I think that still holds true today, especially when you have independent, pardon me, independent shows or independent companies out there trying to run a business. It's a business, and if you don't make any money, you're not going to stay in business. You can't support it. So that's a huge, huge thing. How do you translate what you've learned in professional wrestling to being profitable and also enjoyable? I think you should enjoy this and be able to make money at the same time. So, yeah, a lot of things that we do are based, in fact, everything we do is based in the basics and fundamentals. Locking up, walking in the ring, grabbing a simple hold, keep your head up, spacing, timing, feeling. This is a feeling business, instinctual. And the only way you learn that is just like being a stand-up comic. You can tell jokes all day long in front of a mirror in an empty room, but you don't know how it works until you go in front of an audience and get that reaction, get the idea across, and timing, and know when to hit the punchline. Same thing. We know when to hit that high spot, know when to do a false finish, know when to get bring them up, bring them down. Keep them here. You know, people start chanting boring. They'll get tired, I promise. And you control the action. You control the crowd reaction too.
So can we talk real briefly about your book that you've had out for a couple of years? If somebody's interested, like Donnie, yeah, there you go.
There nice. You go. Put
double there you go, Dr. Tom. All right.
Well, once again, real quick, the name of it is a pro wrestling curriculum, advice, suggestions, and stories to help the aspiring pro get to the next level. All wrestling is suggestions and opinions. And this is just one way to do it for a year. The way this came about was in FCW, they wanted a 1-year curriculum. And there's no such thing. You can't just say, we're going to start here and end here, and we're going to stay all by the book. No, because my way of training is this, and this is the way I did developmental too. We got an idea. We have an agenda. We have a plan. We've got the lesson plan over here. This is what we're going to work on. We're going to work on fireman's carry, headlock takeover, head scissor. We're going to work on going over the top rope. Then we're going to work on just locking up and moving and leading and following in the ring. Okay. You get into that in 15 minutes. It's kind of like when you're going to have a workout and you're feeling like chest that day, but it just ain't working. You just don't feel like pushing once you get down on the bench. So you're going to go back and now let's do back and let me see. I feel like pulling instead of pushing. Same thing in this. If the guys aren't feeling it, I'm not feeling it, and the guys, the energy level's down, I'm going to go to something else. And it's going to be along the same line, and I'm going to come back to this. But I'm going to go to something else, and I'm going to get a rhythm going. I'm going to get a flow going. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the guys to get into it where they're going to learn. We don't have to learn arm bar into a Fujiwara, whatever it is, that day, and then we have to do it that day or else the world's going to end. No, it's not. We're going to feel it, and we're going to go by it. And some guys will never take a hip toss in their career. Some guys won't take a back row. Some guys don't have to do a lot of things in the book. These are suggestions. But you have to know the basics. You have to know how to walk. You have to know how to lock up. You have to know pacing. You have to know timing. Very, very important. I've never heard in all my years of wrestling anybody, as they're walking out of an arena, say, man, what a hammerlock John Cena did tonight. Wow. That's not the idea. But he has to know how to do a hammerlock. He has to have his foundation down. Because in the middle of a match, if something – everybody calls their matches in the back, A, B, C, D, E, F. What happens if at B, something happens and you can't get here because you don't know how to do anything except how to follow the pattern? Well, you have to know how to get if something happens at B and you've got to go all the way to F. You've got to know how to grab a hold. You got to know how to make it work. You got to know how to get back on track. And if you have the basics down to where they're second nature to you, if something happens in the ring that you don't know how to it messed up, and there will be mess ups. There will be times when spots and moves don't go exactly as planned. So you have to know how to still transition and have a match. If you go out there doing the match you called in the back and nobody's buying your stuff, then you need to know how to regroup. You need to know how to adjust. You need to know how to adapt. And not too many guys do. But if you know your basics and fundamentals, if you can put your own move on them and spin on them, that's the key. So the book is suggestions, and with the idea of this is what we're going to do for FCW. But it's a one-year curriculum. Has ideas in there. Has some stories in there. But once again, it all comes down to this is a subjective business. You can do everything in the book, and still you have a long way to go. If you don't have that charisma, personality, that it factor, and on that it factor, let me just say this. Daniel Bryan, never be a superstar, ever. He will never make it in this business. Oh, wait a minute. 70,000 people. Yes, yes, yes. Why? Daniel Bryan was a technical wizard. Daniel Bryan's a hell of a wrestler, hell of a performer. But he's 5'8", buck 80, buck 90. What was it about Daniel Bryan that got so many people into him? What was it? You don't know how to put your finger on it, but there was something about Daniel Bryan. He connected with the audience. He drew them in. It was that connection. Whether it's promos, but in-ring moves, whatever it was. But the key thing is he connected in the back as well. And he made allies, and he made friends. And but he did it authentically and genuinely. He did it. He's a genuine guy. He really has the personality to get along with people. Plus, he's great in the ring. But you don't do it by yourself. And you can have all the moves in the world. You can be the greatest technician in the world, greatest flip-flop and fly in the world. But if they don't like you, you ain't going to be there. That's the truth. That's the bottom line. Good players want to be coached. Great players want to be told the truth. And unfortunately, I tell everybody my truth, what I see. And it doesn't always get over with people because sometimes you have to yell at them. And sometimes, well, wait a minute. You don't have to, but sometimes I yell at people. And to get my point across, you don't want to do roles. You don't want to warm up with the class, but yet you want to have fun in a match. No, you're going to participate or you're not going to participate. And so I adjust my curriculum as it goes, and I see what my guys are capable and what they're best at. I'm going to accent that, and I'm going to see if these guys have anything to offer in the entertainment business, like professional wrestling, I'm going to concentrate on that. But one thing that everybody should know how to do these days is cut a promo, tell a story, connect, be real, be authentic. And it's not easy these days because nobody understands what it's like to be larger than life and authentic. What it's like to be a guy like a John Cena. I haven't seen a John Cena come along since John Cena. I haven't seen a Ric Flair come along since Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, you know, even a Shawn Michaels, a Triple H, the larger than life personas who are real and authentic. People know when you're playing a part. People know when you're not real. People know when you're just acting instead of reacting. And I talk about that in the book. I talk about that when we train people. So it's a never ending process. Once again, one of the greatest things for me is when I'm trying to teach somebody a lesson, when I learn a lesson out of it, and I learn how to talk to people after that too, because I can be an asshole. I can be a flaming asshole, and I've been called a flaming asshole many, many times. So I'm okay with that. But sometimes, again, you have to figure out who to kick in the ass, who to pat on the back. And I don't always make the right call, but I will admit when I'm wrong, or if you think I'm wrong, I'll debate you, and then you tell me why. And it's all a process, man. This could be the greatest business in the world. It could be the worst business in the world. But I tell you what, at Amazon.com, you can punch in Dr. Tom Pritchard's book in the subject line, and you can get all these suggestions and ideas you want.
Yeah, actually, I've had the book for a couple years myself, and I've read through it, and it's an amazing book for anybody that's a wrestler, wanting to be a wrestler, wanting to be a trainer or is a trainer, or even a fan that just wants to learn a little more about what wrestling's about. I mean, the book is fantastic in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that. But listen, again, you can take bits and pieces, drills from here, drills from there, and add them together on one day, take away from one day, give the ideas, suggestions. Trust me, it's just one way. There's not only one way. It's nothing's etched in stone that says, by God, this is it. That's not it. But I appreciate you saying that. It is, it might be some kind of guide for somebody. So.
Sure. And another thing you do that I don't know if a lot of people know about, but we'd like to make it aware, is that you do a Facebook group too called Snake Pit Pro with Sin Bodhi and Cody Hawk's been on there. A lot of guys get on there, and you guys just basically get on there and just answer questions, give free information, try to teach people the business. And I think it's a fantastic group. I try to get on there, you know, as often as I can. And there's a lot of good content that's come out of that group because of you guys.
I agree, and that was all Sin's doing. I know Gangrel's been on there a bunch too, and yep. and it's an opportunity. It was when everybody was shut down, and we were conversing back and forth, and so when I went on there, I thought, yeah, okay, I get it, and you know, I critiqued some matches, you know, through two connections on there, and. It's good when you have stuff like that, because there's no excuse then. If you really want to hone your craft and you really want to be great at this, you have everybody you can pick from. And on Snake Pit Pro or any of the resources out there, if it's not on Snake Pit Pro, you can send a message or send a question, and somebody will get the answer for you. That's a good thing too. So I got to give all the credit to Sin, but I'll tell you, David Heath has been on there a lot too, and he's been he comes up with some good stuff, man. And that's the other thing. It just because you're a great worker doesn't always make you a great person. But a lot of the people on there on Snake Pit Pro are genuine and are concerned about the future of the business and want to do the best they can. So you know, there's a lot of places out there that are not so good schools, and some they are what they are, but you know, at the same time, the good schools, in my opinion, are the ones who never stop learning or looking for advice. I look for advice, man. I got people I call too, and just have a sounding board, because I wasn't everybody's favorite either, and you learn from your mistakes if you're smart, and sometimes you learn and keep learning, and I keep learning. I'm one of those guys who keeps, you know, sometimes I'll step in a pothole when it's right in front of me and I could have avoided it, but man, I'm that guy that bam, you know? So we all keep learning, and as long as you keep learning and keep moving forward, I think everybody's okay. But yeah, Snake Pit Pro is a very cool thing, and that's all thanks to Sin Bodhi.
Very good. And you also do a podcast of your own. The segment's Taking You to School.
Yes.
Dr. Tom Pritchard.
And, well, that again, you know, I got to tell you guys this. As you know, because you're doing a podcast yourself, see, it takes a lot of work. You know, do the research, do whatever you got to do. I mean, it takes a lot of work. And during the gosh, we started in January, I think, with the podcast, but during the COVID, I had a little more time, but now we do it on Sunday nights, and it's good. It's a great outlet to this way, you know, you have something you can inform people about, and it's been a lot of fun. And John Paz does all the research. 'Cause I told him, said, man, I'm right now, I can't do it. I can't do what he does, and he does it well. So yeah, we're taking you to school every Monday, I think it drops, because we do it Sunday night, 8:30 until we're done.
Just let it run, huh?
Right.
Well, Tom, do you want to plug your website, any social media where people can find out more about Dr. Tom Pritchard?
I would love to. Actually, JPWA has our website is jpwrestlingacademy.com. Has all the information about our next classes coming up, which would be August 31st through October 20th. And that'll be our last 12-week session for 2020. And then in October, November, I'm going to run classes usually from 3 to 8. And just for some of the guys who are still around here want to come in and train in the ring. But jpwrestlingacademy.com. We are also on Twitter at JPWA. Facebook is Jacobs Pritchard Wrestling Academy. And my Twitter is at Dr. Tom Pritchard, which we also update. I try not to go on Twitter too much. It's not intentional, but at the same time, I put my head in that wood chipper a few times, and I just went, "Oh my god!" You know, because everybody's an expert, and everybody wants to fight, and I just, man, please. So that's the way I feel about it. But the Facebook page, I also have a personal Facebook page on there as well, just at Tom Pritchard. So I appreciate it, man. We've been very happy and very fortunate with JPWA in the last year and a half, a little over a year and a half now. And Knoxville is a great place. Let me just plug this real quick. Knoxville is a cool place to live. It's the cost of living is pretty reasonable and downright cheap for anybody who wants to come and move. We've had people from all over the country come. In fact, we had one kid, the second class, come in from India for 12 weeks to train with us. He came with his mom and his sister. And he stayed here for 12 weeks, 17 years old. And, you know, I know when people come to wrestling training, they're looking for something and they're looking for the answer. Not everybody has the answers, but I guarantee you, I do believe this, that there's three kinds of people in this world. Those who try, those who give it their best shot, and those who say whatever it takes. And it really is true. If people tell you no your whole life, you can choose to believe them, or you can choose to prove them wrong. Whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right either way. It's true. And a lot of people get tired of hearing the positive thinking and believe in yourself stuff, but try it. It works. It really does. And that's what we teach at JPWA too. So any questions or notes or emails, you can send them to jpwrestlingacademy@gmail.com also. So,
yeah, well, I do know one thing that I can attest to from what he said is we are avid fans of the Gatlinburg Pigeon Forge area, and yeah, my family frequently does our vacationing down there. That's our favorite area to be around. And so we've been through Knoxville many times, and it is, I mean, just that area of Tennessee is just beautiful.
Yeah. And Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg is only, it's 40 minutes for us, for where I'm at, but yeah, it is beautiful. And you can rent a cabin, you can go to Dollywood. You can, it's just walking around Gatlinburg is a trip in itself. So yeah, it's a really nice place.
Yeah,
and you can learn to wrestle while you're here.
There you go. I frequent in the moonshine stores in Gatlinburg. Maybe
there, and there's one. There's one or two of them out there too, I think. That's their source of revenue, I think. Maybe.
Right. Gatlinburg. Yeah, I know one thing. Next time we plan a Gatlinburg Pigeon Forge trip, I'd love to stop in and look at the school.
By all means, we're going to have some new additions. Actually, after for this class, I'm headed to. I'm when this is done, I'm gonna do some things, and then I'm gonna head to a secret location and grab some stuff to put on our walls and just give it that old school feel too. I think the environment you're in, the attitude you're in, the whole overall experience has a lot to do with what you're learning at the same time. And I'm one of these guys who, if you have to put something on the walls to inspire you, by all means, let's do it. If that's what it takes. But if it's just being in that environment and looking at somebody you've never seen before, but you're wondering about them, maybe it'll cause you to go Google Stan Stasiak or Dory Funk Jr. or the Fargo brothers or some of the guys who came before you, because, and I know, well, I don't want to talk all day, guys, I apologize, but there's a match between Pat O'Connor and Buddy Rogers in 1961, I believe it is, where Buddy wins the NWA championship from Pat O'Connor in Comiskey Park. We watched this again for storytelling. In the early 1960s, it's not the same culture. It's not the same business. No, it's not. But there's one move in this match that O'Connor does where he grabs the arm bar on Buddy Rogers and walks all the way around Buddy. And it looks like he's twisting his arm off, and nobody does that because nobody knows how to do that. When we watch it, we tell guys you can incorporate this if you know how and where to do it. And we'll even try it in a match, and then it just goes by the wayside. So there's old, what's old will be new again. Another example, Mick Foley needed a hold. He could do with everybody. A guy named Sam Shepard was in the business maybe 3 months, 4 months at the most, and he used the mandible claw. And a historian like Jim Cornette would know about things like this, and Mick called Jim. Needed a move, and Jim popped right out of the top of his head, you know, Dr. Sam Shepard, mandible claw. And nobody really knew where it came from except the historians and people who – love the business enough to look it up. So that's one of the main reasons we talk about old tapes and old school working, because you don't see the timing today. You don't see storytelling today. And I understand it's because business has changed. Not for the better always. It's still storytelling. And if you can do it and be different, then you would be different in doing it, I guess. So that's my feeling on that.
Very cool.
But always come next trip to Knoxville, you're more than welcome. Come on down, check us out. We got some cool stuff,
man. Absolutely. Yeah, my wife wants to actually move to Tennessee, and she's asked me many times to start talking about the process, and I'm like new Ohio wrestling in southeastern Tennessee sounds kind of ridiculous.
Well, you know, yeah maybe so.
So we'd have to do a name change.
beautiful place to live, though. It really is. I dug it. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, we've got some great, great content for this episode, Tom. You've been a wealth of knowledge, and I think people are really going to enjoy this. For myself and the other two, I want to say thank you for coming on to the show on such short notice. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it as well. And again, any questions or anything you guys have, email us jpwrestlingacademy@gmail.com. But thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. And like I said, if you're in Knoxville, come see us.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. So with that being said, I'm Meat Hook Jim, along with Donnie Hoover, John Orlando, and our special guest, Dr. Tom Pritchard. We are the Wrestle Horror Podcast. Thanks for listening and watching.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets, facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram @WrestleHorror, Twitter @WrestleHorror, on our YouTube channel, The Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.